so when I heard your first podcast and I heard you publicly tell how poor we were and what you went through, I broke down and sobbed for days. And it wasn't you that did it. It was the fact that I was listening to this and I had to take it to heart that that was my family. Those were my kids. It was my responsibility. And that was a challenge. And it took me almost 3 months to come out of that.
Real business. Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
We created a text hotline just to add value to you guys as listeners. 435-515-3577. If you guys have questions, anything to do with your taxes, shoot us a text.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. Today, I have the most special guest that I've ever had the chance to interview. This woman has showed me more love than anybody. A lot of the times, I wasn't worth showing that type of love to. It's my mother. And, you know, we've been through hell and back. You know, you guys have heard me talk about some of the, you know, things that I've done growing up, some of the mistakes that I've made, how I grew up, all of that. You know, I would say that I had the luxury of growing up with a little bit less than most people. I wouldn't trade that for anything though. You know, I don't believe that I would be the individual that I am today or want some of the things that I want or have some of the things that I have if I didn't have that perspective. So a lot of people that are struggling right now, they're going to say, poor me, and feel sorry for themselves. And believe me, I did too. You know, I didn't really care to have friends over and show them, you know, how we lived, you know, things like that. And so, it's been probably the last 3 months. Every so often I've had a little small voice like, hey, you should bring your mom on, you know, you should interview your mom. So it's not necessarily about me, but at the same time, I want to kind of pull the curtain back so that you guys can know a little bit more about me and understand like the type of hell that I did put my mom through. Maybe there's a mother listening to it that's going through something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why I, you know, have had this thought over and over and over. And finally on Friday, the other day, I said, hey, mom, you want to be on the podcast? You know, and reluctantly, you know, she said, yes. I think that you were nervous, excited, you know, kind of all of it, right?
Oh, it was both. I looked at that text and it was like, are you kidding me? It was like half of me was like, this is so exciting. And the other half was, I don't know if I can do this. So yeah, there was a little bit of both. And more than anything, it was like, I don't know what you want from me. I don't know what you expect this to be or what you want. So it was more of a, and I even said, okay, I'll call you. And he says, you don't need to call me. We just get on and do our stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, but what do you want? You know?
It was a conversation, you know?
Yeah, it was hard. It was exciting and hard.
Yeah. I want it to be authentic. You know, I don't want a list of questions, right? Obviously, I want to go through some memories, right? Mm-hmm. Like I said, we grew up with a little bit less than. Yeah, I don't know if you remember, I used to love, I checked the mail for the publisher clearinghouse thing because I was hoping one day we would get, you know, the big check. Yeah, I think everybody was probably wanting to, because sometimes they send you those fake checks where you think that you won.
You won everything.
Just in order for you to kind of fill it out. But if you will, from your perspective, because I've kind of described it myself, you know, how was my upbringing, right? In terms of like financially, in terms of, you know, all of it, you know?
All right. Wow. I did bring my tissues, you guys, because they're going to be needed. So, I mean, as far as when Trevor talks about, let me tell you this. Okay, can I start? Are you going to start already? Like, I'm going to start bawling already. Sorry, you guys, bear with me. Okay, it comes from the heart here, but when Trevor first started his podcast, and I've not told him this, when he started the podcast, and I listened to the very first one, and it was him and Kale, and they were going on about their childhood, and they were telling about themselves a little bit. Now, as a mom, you know, there was eventually seven. There were seven kids. And we did not have any money. We didn't. I mean, I'm not, I won't go into the other side of the whys or all of that, you know, but we didn't. And I'll tell you a few things in just a minute, but I knew that. And as a mom, you try to hide that from your kids. And that was one of my biggest things is how do I make my kids feel like we're okay? How do I make them not feel like we are as poor as we were? And that was a challenge and a heartfelt challenge for me was to try to fake that we were better than we were. And I don't know that I really did that well. I think they kind of all figured it out. It's pretty easy well, to figure
I,
out.
I mean, I think at a young, young age, when you're not worried about what other people think, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as big of a deal.
Yeah.
But once you start getting to the point where, you know that you're not wearing the same shoes as other people or the same clothes as other people. And you get, you know, hand-me-downs from your cousins and, you know, things like that. At that point, you start becoming a little insecure about it, right?
About what you have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, to the point that some of the kids actually put cardboard on the bottom of their shoe because there was a hole in the bottom of the shoe. But anyway, going back to that podcast, as a mom trying to hide all this, and things were busy. I was always putting out fires, trying to take care of, trying to do that. I just kept kind of moving forward, just always moving forward and not really absorbing what was going on. I don't know how to explain that, but I couldn't really process what was going on because I was always just trying to move forward to the next thing and trying to make it right for everybody and trying to cover up and trying to work and trying to do things and things like that. So when I heard your first podcast, and I heard you publicly tell how poor we were and what you went through, I broke down and sobbed for days. And it wasn't you that did it. It was the fact that I was listening to this and I had to take it to heart that that was my family. Those were my kids. It was my responsibility. And that was a challenge. And it took me almost 3 months to come out of that. And that happened when I heard that first podcast because it was the realization of all of a sudden I had to process all of that that I had really just gone past and hadn't processed. Mm. And that hit me when I heard your first podcast and had to do that. And I went into almost a numb darkness for almost 3 months. Mm. And I don't think I ever mentioned that to you really or anybody else because I didn't want to take away from what you were doing and how important
it's important for other people to note like how many people their life is dictated based upon how they grew up.
Right.
You know, were limiting beliefs that they have about themselves based upon how they grew up.
Yeah.
You know, like humans are the only thing that, you know, has the memory that we have. And we hold on to these old memories of the environment that we grew up in or the things that we didn't have, and we just take it with us like we can't have
like
more
we can't
than
change
we can't change it, right?
Well, and I think an important thing too, and is what I felt then is not only is it the memories, but the body holds it. If you don't express it, the body holds it.
Yeah.
And it's really, really important as you go through certain things in life that you process them as you go through them. Because if you don't and you hold on, there's going to be that breaking point where all of a sudden it all comes out because it's being held somewhere. So there has to be a processing.
You got to rinse it out of your system somehow.
Yeah, you do.
Somehow.
I mean, it's good to move on,
yeah,
but you have to process as you move on.
Well, there's a difference between burying it and moving on and actually processing it and becoming better because of it rather than, you know, utilizing it as an excuse or, again, the more that we bury, I think the less authentic that we could be. And I think that that's one thing that makes our podcast a little bit different is we're very vulnerable and open about just about anything, whether it's, you know, business struggles or the way that we grew up struggles or, you know, my drug addict past or, you know, the DUIs and, you know, whatever it is, because I think it's super important that people know that success doesn't look a certain way. It didn't have a certain upbringing. It's more of a choice. It's more of a mindset. It's more of actions that you take on a day-to-day basis that determines where you end up. Everything else is just an opportunity to learn and grow, you know, from.
Yeah.
And so That makes me feel bad.
No, it was a cleaning out and a process probably that I needed. Yeah. It really was. It was a cleaning out and a process that I needed. But for a little while, I didn't know where I'd gone. For that 3 months, I couldn't figure out if I was going to come back, where I'd gone, what happened. But I knew that it was just all of this processing. So, man, I would encourage anybody, process as you go along. But like you say, success in your future does not have anything to do with where you've been in the past. It doesn't have anything to do with where you are now or what your past was. Success is what you decide now that you're going to do, yeah. where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. I would venture to say that some of the most successful people had some of the worst
upbringings. And again, yeah, like
because they're determined that they're not going to have that anymore.
Yes.
And they rise above that.
But let's separate a terrible upbringing financially from a terrible upbringing in terms of lack of love.
Right.
And I think that that has to be, you know, distinguished, that those are two totally different things. There's people that grew up very, very poor and had lack of love.
Right.
Like I don't, just so that you know, I mean, I even told Nicole, Nicole's my wife, not that long ago, that my mom used to rub my hair and tell me how special I was as a little boy growing up. And I never forgot that, right? Like that is also embedded into my subconscious. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you're special. You're going to do amazing things, you know? And so, there was lots and lots of love. What we lacked financially, you made up for in terms of the amount of love and care that you poured into me and, you know, my siblings. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that that's important to distinguish those two things. Like, there might be somebody listening to this is very poor or doesn't have much financially, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't build individuals or these kids up to grow up to make them believe that they're still special, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Like special doesn't mean that you have the nicest pair of Nikes,
right?
Right. It's just who you are as an individual, not what you have as an individual. And so I think it's important to highlight that too. When I say terrible upbringing, that's just the financial aspect, right?
And let me just, I'm going to just say this too. I don't know if you remember the year, you were probably really young, but going back again to the just how poor were you kind of a thing. We literally didn't have any money and I did not know where the next things were coming from. I mean, to take a spin on where I come from, I mean, I prayed diligently always as to where I was going to, how I was going to feed the kids, how this was going to happen, how that was going to happen. But I remember there was one time there was Trevor and two other siblings that have their birthdays in July. And they got birthday cards from grandparents and we had to use their birthday card money and somehow turn it to where they felt like they were really special. And using this birthday money to go buy milk and eggs and bread so that we had something to eat. And you may not remember that, but I can remember.
Thank goodness you gave birth to three kids in July.
I remember going to Harmon's. That was, you know, where it was in the local grocery store there. And you guys each had your envelope and you were each so proud that you were going to buy eggs with yours and milk with it. But that's how it was. And you can imagine a mother's heart in trying to say, this is so fun, kids. Look what you're doing. Mm. When inside it's like, this is so wrong. Mm. This is so wrong, you know? Mm. But I remember that. And then I remember your older sister. She wanted school lunch one time, hot lunch from school. She asked for some money to do that. And I didn't have any dollars. I didn't have any money to give her for that. And I said, no, we'll just make something. And she said, well, Mom, I have a loose tooth. If I can pull my tooth tonight, do you think the tooth fairy would give me enough money to I could buy school lunch tomorrow? Man, talk about broken heart. Talk about broken heart.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were a pain in the butt, Trev.
No, I mean, look, at the same time, lacking, you know, food and things, you know, looking in the cupboards and there's nothing, right? You know, maybe making a piece of toast and, you know, buttering it and, you know, looking for some cinnamon to put on it, you know, powdered milk and, you know, that whole thing. There were still people in our neighborhood that had it worse. You know, I remember the people up the street. I don't remember. Maybe their last name is Hardings or something. I don't remember, but in their cupboards, it was just full of cockroaches. Mm. When it was empty and they had just insects and bugs and everything all around, right? So there was still the perspective of like, yeah, I mean, we don't really have much, you know, financially or food, but like there were people that were actually living, you know, with that type of environment, lack of love and lack of food and lack of everything. And so there's always somebody that has it worse.
You
right?
will always I guess, find
I guess
worse.
Is,
you will always
is the
find
point
worse.
That I'm trying yes. to make.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
There's plenty of people that have it better, but it just really depends on what you focus on. Right. I'm a big believer these days that we just need to stop focusing on, you know, anything external and start really focusing on internal. Self-worth is created from the inside. It's not created based upon the shoes that you wear, the car you drive, the house that you live in. I believe that I'm successful financially because I was chasing self-worth through, you know, financial means because that's what I, you know, when you're young and you're poor,
well,
that's
what
success looks
at that
like,
point,
right?
Because you didn't have it. And I think we all start, we all value what we didn't have, you know? And so that was something that you didn't have and you were going to make sure that was not the rest of your life.
Well,
you were
a lot
make
of the turmoil growing up was lack of finances, not lack of love, or like I alluded to earlier. And so it was like, well, if that was the source of a lot of our problems, so you're telling me if I just focus on this and make lots of money, then I won't really have any problems, right?
And you found that that's not really true, right?
That's definitely not the case. Yeah. Once you find money, if that's the hope, you'll actually feel lower than you were when you began the journey, because at least when you began the journey, there was hope that at the end of this,
that you were going to find them.
That you would find your worth, right? And so it's okay to not have it, but at least there's a target to find it. And then when you get there and you make millions of dollars and it's still not there, that's when you'll find yourself in a truly, truly dark place, right? Which I believe is a special place to be in, because then it forces you to really look inside and start digging and finding, like, really, what's the value of life? Why are we here if it's not just this or that or whatever it is, right? And so I'm grateful for the fact that, you know, I have financial abundance, but at the same time, I'm also grateful for the fact that I found it. And there's so many people out there that are still chasing that, believing that there's something that will give them inside, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it does a lot of great things. You can support a lot of people, charities, whatever. Like, I'm not saying money's a bad thing, but self-worth is an inside job, you know, no doubt. So, let's talk about raising hell a little bit, because, you know, I do feel forever indebted to you. I don't know how you put up with it and how you dealt with it, but, you know, I was your problem child. You know, big time, you know. I started smoking weed and drinking at 13 years old. And that's about the time I said, Mom, I'm, you know, big enough. I'm not going to church with you no more, right?
Right.
But I think you didn't really have the energy to fight and battle seven children to try to get seven children up to get to go to church. So you kind of had to pick and choose your battles there.
You do. And there's two theories. Like, some people will say, you know, you're under my roof, you're going to do it, these are my rules, you're going to go ahead and do that, you know? And I understand that. I get that. But there's no way. To me, the love of a family was far more important. Having my kids have place and knowing that they were loved no matter what, somehow I didn't feel like it was showing the love of Christ to say, if you don't do what I do, I don't love you. Or if you don't do what I do, you're out. You know, that's... I don't see that being the example of what it was I was going to church for, you know, on that. So, yeah, you stopped going. I knew there was difficult things going on. You became difficult. I think school became difficult. But the thing of it is, Trev, you came with attitude. Like, it didn't just happen at 14 or 13. Like, I can remember disciplining you when you were young, and I had you go sit in your room. And then I walked down the hall and you literally had torn strips of wallpaper off the walls in your bedroom and you were slipping them underneath the door out to the hallway so I could see what you were doing in there. And it was like,
you punish me, I'm going to punish
you. Yeah. It was like, I'll show you what I'm doing in here if you're going to do this to me. So you had attitude from the get-go. And I mean, it was just that kind of stuff when you were little. You were the one playing in the ashes, playing in the fire, doing all the, so you had this, you know, I always explained you as Trevor has both extremes. He loves deeply and he loves at this high extreme and he's good and kind. But when he is ornery or mean or whatever, he is at the very end of this extreme.
Yeah.
So you had polar, man. You had it going on both ends.
You don't
want
to be on the opposite end of the bad side.
No, you didn't. You were not a morning person. You hated,
I am now.
I know. And that's why I say, if you want, if you want to see change, I mean, this is the caterpillar that came out the butterfly, bar none. Because I would try to talk to you, taking you to work in the morning, and you were just ornery and mean, and you just say, it's early, don't talk to me. I mean, you were just mean about it. It's like, okay, let me just get you to work, kick you out of the car and have your day, you know. Mm. Not a morning person. I wrote down a couple of things too. I mean, you were the one that, like, nobody else really thought to do this, but you were the one that got into the Crisco can when you were about 2 years old and just smeared it all over the cupboards and the floor and everywhere.
Wasn't
it
hitting baseball and eggs?
I have that. Yeah, yeah. The egg baseball. Now, egg baseball, guys, is fine.
Yeah.
If you want to do it outside.
Yeah.
But when you do it in your family room and the house, egg baseball is really not cool.
Yeah, throw up an egg and hit it with a baseball bat.
Yeah,
and
it was just all
dripping
down the walls of the family room. And that happened when we were gone. Like I think your dad and I at that time were out.
Yeah.
And we came home to just eggshells and eggs dripping all over the walls. And they just had a blast. They thought it was fun. They were doing egg baseball in the house. It was just amazing. Shoot, some of the things. Oh, your baseball, which you were great at. You and your brother did baseball, and we had the best times going and watching you guys play.
I loved playing baseball growing up. Yeah,
you were so mean when you didn't get what you wanted. If you struck out, if you didn't get to anything, you would throw that bat down. You'd throw your hat, and the coaches had to settle you down. And this is when you were little. This is not like older. This is when you were like an 8, 9, and it's just like, oh my gosh, so embarrassing.
Like 12,
you would throw a fit.
I'd take my helmet off and slam it up against the fence or throw the baseball bat if I struck out or whatever it is. I just wanted to perform and I wanted to be good and I wanted to, you know.
But you wanted to perform in all kinds. It didn't matter whether it was good or bad. You were going to perform. Yeah. You were going to perform. You were going to make sure people, but everybody knew that Trevor was going to. I mean, it was a scene.
He better get a hit.
It was a scene when you didn't get what you wanted that way or get a hit or anything like that. So, yeah. One of the other things that I wanted to bring up, too, is the determination that you had from the time you were little. And like I said, you had it on both ends. You were polar. You were as determined to do what you wanted to do as anything. And when you wanted to go off that high dive at 4 years old, do you remember that?
No, I was four.
You were four. Well, I know, but do you remember that at all?
No.
Oh, my gosh. We were all at the pool, and I think I had just had your younger brother. So I couldn't, you know, he was small enough that I wasn't in the pool. But you went into the deep end, and you were determined you were going to go off the high dive. Well, you were 4 years old, and it was like, dude, you can't do this. Like, this is bigger than you think, you know? But that didn't stop you. You were determined, and you kept asking, and you kept asking, and you kept asking. And finally, I said, okay, here's the deal. If you can swim across the pool and back to me so that I know that you can make it once you go off that high dive, then I'll let you go off. Well, I did not think that you would do that, but you did. You were so determined. You swam across and you swam back, and it was like, okay, I got to let go. And that really taught me the lesson that sometimes our kids can do a lot more than we allow them. Like, we set these boundaries. We set age boundaries.
Yeah.
We set these things of like, no, you're only this, you know, at this age you do this, at this age you do this. But you were determined at four you were going to go off the high dive. And you climbed that high dive and you had everybody in the whole pool area watching this little kid go off the high dive. Now, the first time I was scared to death and was ready to jump in after you if I had to, you know. You got to the end, you jumped in, came up, swam to the edge, and you never quit. You never quit. And every time you went up that ladder to the high dive, there was not anybody that wasn't watching you go up that ladder because you were just this, well, you're not very tall now, but.
Yeah, I was about 5'7". Haven't grown since I was 4 years old. So they still watch me.
You
were still watch me on
you
the high dives.
You were just this little guy climbing up there. And at first I was scared. Then after that, I was just so proud because you did it and you loved it.
Yeah.
You loved it. But it was that determination that you had from the time you were little that you were going to do what you wanted to do.
Well, I mean, I think that that's, again, growing up lacking financially, if I wanted something, you know, I remember working at the place that you worked pulling weeds. I remember, you know, the golf balls going down into the, in the bushes and bring back the bundles of golf balls and
clean
polish them
and
up.
Clean them and go back
going
and sell
back to the course and selling the golf balls, doing whatever I could to be able to make some money. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. Obviously that determination or whatever it is, but, again, I, that's why I feel like I'm forever indebted to you, because it could have turned out several different ways. I don't know how you dealt with, you know, egg baseball and, you know, stuff like that. You know how I am with my kids. I'm very disciplined, you know.
And it's great. There's sometimes I just I just go, and those are my grandkids. Can you just please go easy on
my
grandkids?
Yeah. You know?
But I think for me it was I don't know. I just think it was that thing of knowing that there is more to this child or more to the kids than what they're doing. It's more of who they are. And honestly, when it came right down to it, you guys were all I had. I mean, I was as poor as you were. And I had a situation where I didn't know quite how to deal with the other side of that. And I felt very alone. And you guys were all that I had. You know, I mean, that was mine. You guys were my money. You were my pride. You were my joy. You were my riches. And that was in every single one of you. And you were my pains. Yeah. But my goal was bigger than what was going on right at the moment. My goal was bigger. And maybe I didn't do it right. You know, I think as parents, you always have that. Maybe I should have done this different and should have done that different. And especially when you got into the drugs and got into things like that, it was always the, what have I done wrong? And I should have done this and I should have done that. And I've blown it. I didn't do it right. You know? Mm. And so as a mom, you get that. I mean, there were the times when I did go through, when we did go through the divorce, and we all went through it. Honestly, it wasn't just me, because we all experienced it, you know? Mm. So we all went through that. But there was the times where I felt like such a failure. I was ready to take myself out.
Yeah.
But it was the fact that there was my kids and I couldn't do that. But there were times where I had, you know, things from a back surgery I had in a drawer, and it's like, all I got to do is just
take,
I got to just take those, man. And I'm because it wasn't because I didn't want to be in it. It was because my value felt so depleted that I felt like I wasn't doing anybody any good. And I felt like I had failed everyone on where we were at. I felt like there was no more that I could do, and that everybody needed something better than what I was, and that it would have been better for them to have something different. And so those were challenges too, dealing with that. And so, but it was interesting. But you, I'm looking at my little cheat sheet here. Do you remember going, you went to school? Cause you ended up going over to Mill Creek, didn't graduate with your class, but went to Mill Creek, right?
I do remember there was one time that I didn't get an F on a report card and you put it on the fridge because it was like D, D-, D+, D, D. And then there was like PE and weight training or something. It was like AA. Right. But at least I didn't have an F.
You didn't have an F.
You know,
it was an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Right.
That was
those little baby steps. Yeah,
you know, most parents are putting the 4.0 or whatever on their fridge. My mom put the, didn't fail one class this quarter. And that was a huge accomplishment for me, because
it was big.
School didn't really keep my attention.
No. But do you remember going to the one class, and I don't remember what you had that t-shirt, and you guys, he made you look in the mirror and do those affirmations. Do you remember that?
I remember there was like a summer program. Yes. It wasn't actually.
Wasn't
like,
it school?
It wasn't school because, it was for getting credits because I didn't graduate with my class on time. But the guy was like a motivational dude or whatever, and was teaching us, I think because it was just kids that were, I guess, bad kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
struggling
or whatever, you know. So they brought this individual in, and you could get credits for going to this, I don't know, what was that? Maybe
a self-esteem type of a class. I'm not sure what it was, but I just,
I don't even remember how long it was, but I do remember, you know, writing down a lot of stuff in a notebook and, you know, I actually thought that was really cool, which was a lot different than school.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I don't remember what it was that he told you to say, But I remember you would come home and you would say, I have to look in the mirror, and you'd point at yourself and say something over and over again.
Like, I remember they made us spell out our name, yeah, and we had to put like T for terrific,
okay,
R for whatever, right? Yeah. We had to like kind of write something down that we felt as though that we identified with per letter of our name or something like that. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, I don't fully remember a whole lot.
Something like that. I do remember that. One of the things that I kind of wrote on my little cheat sheet here that I wanted to bring out too was, from the time that you were little, you were always a worker. Like, you were always a hard worker, no matter what it was that you went to do.
Yeah.
And that was one of my biggest worries as I watched you grow up, was you were 100%er. And my biggest challenge was, if I can keep him in the right line, he will do 100%. If he goes the other way, he'll do it 100%. And you did.
Yeah.
You know, when you went wrong, you went 100% wrong.
Yeah, but I was the biggest crackhead out of all my friends. Right. You know, like when I chew tobacco, I want to have the fattest dip in my lip more so than every, like, it's always one level above.
It was
above,
always,
whether
I'm gonna
it was
do it,
good or bad, right?
Yes, and I knew that. And it was like, my biggest challenge was, how do I keep him in the right headspace to do the right thing? But when you couldn't have been, again, more than three or four, when in front of the yard, they had like the street cleaners to come. They would have the big machine come, and then they'd have the guys go behind, and they had their brooms and their stuff, and they would just rake things out. Well, you went and got your shovel from the backyard, and you went and helped these guys out front. And honestly, you couldn't have been more. And they thought that was the best thing. They took you around the whole block that we lived on, and you went with them and cleaned.
I was a street cleaner for a minute. Huh?
You thought that was the best, but you were just in it 100%. You were going to be with those guys working, and you did. And they thought that was the best thing ever. And
I always looked up to people that worked hard.
You did.
I always looked up to people that were building houses, and, you know, because that was something
you could
visual.
See something
I could see people in offices, right?
Yeah.
But like, people building brick walls or whatever around neighborhood, you know.
Yeah.
I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was impressive. And they were so impressed with you. Your bike jumps. We can't, you know, forget all your bike jumps and the digging of the bike jumps that you made. And I don't know if you remember the one time that the police actually came and tried to kick you guys off of the property.
Across the street
because it was somebody else's. And I went over and talked to the officer. I don't know if you remember that, but I went over and talked to him and I said, look, you can't do these to these boys. They have worked so hard. I'm not going to be suing anybody if they break a leg on this property, because that was the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, if they break a leg or if they get hurt or something like that, this is somebody else's property. And it was like, dude, this is all they've got to do. Like, there's nothing else for these boys to go do. Do not take them off this property. But those bike jumps were incredible. And you guys were incredible, as well as the jumps that you made with the boards in front of on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, the jumps, and we would sit out and watch you guys just back and forth on those jumps. So just always trying to find something to do, always being creative in one way or another, whether it was good or bad.
Yeah.
So you always
creating
had that.
Creating or destroying,
yes,
I guess.
Yeah, whatever. But in your head, it was probably still creating one way or another. Before I really get into a lot of stuff here, I wanted to, I just put down that your first job, I think, was Frizzoli's. Do you remember Frizzoli's?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Not a good time.
I had to
time.
Make sure the pasta was al dente.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll remember that. Yeah. But yeah, I used to like smoke weed and stuff back in the fridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was to the extent of my hard work then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a really hard worker. And then it got to the point where I just didn't care about anything except for, you know, hanging with the crew and smoking weed and doing whatever drugs I can get my hands on.
Yeah.
You know, I remember taking acid, I think in 11th grade and going to school at 15 or 16 years old, something like that, right? Like, I just wanted to escape, I guess, you know? And I think that there's a lot of people in this day and age that just want to escape, right? And that's why they, you know, do what they do or drink or drug or whatever it is. But I also believe that the people that choose to face it head on have the ability to work miracles, right? Like, like you said, I was either destroying in a massive way or I can create
in a massive
way. Like, literally, out of all my friends, I was like the biggest drug addict in terms of like a fiend, right?
Well, and I think that in some way, because you had that 100% mindset, that took you to that place too. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Whatever it was you were going to do was going to be better than anybody else, or more than, or, you know,
I was the first one to use a needle in my arm with the friends, right? Like, and I remember you used to say, hey, you know, your friends. What was hard for me to digest about that is that I was the worst out of all of them at that point. So when you're saying, hey, you got to watch who you're hanging out with, your friends, bad influence, like,
you were the worst influence on all
of
them.
I was going harder than all of them. And so, you know, to say that they were bad, if anything, they were always the ones like, geez, dude, like,
go back.
Yeah.
You know, take it easy.
Like, man, you're really, you know, going hard with some of this stuff. I don't know if you remember me coming home with a swollen face that one time.
Oh, it's on my cheat sheet.
Oh, yeah.
When I was stamped
held at gunpoint and a knife to my throat.
That was hard because you didn't tell me the truth on that one.
Well, what do you think? I'm going to come home and say, hey, I just had a knife to my throat and a gun to my head and punched in the face.
You came home and I remember finding out another way. What had really happened, but you came home and your cheek was swollen. I think your teeth were loose, black and blue, the whole bit. And then you gave us some story about you were defending some girls at the park.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
I had to make up something honorable.
Yes.
What I told you, I still remember.
Yeah. That there was some guys that were bothering some girls.
Using the B word or whatever to the girls.
You had to step in and defend these girls.
I had to step in and say that wasn't okay. And I got jumped or beat up because it was... My face was pretty beat up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember that story. And I remember, you know, you were upstairs and we, you know, cleaned you up, ice packed you, did the whole thing, took care of you and the whole thing. And then I found out later exactly what had happened. And again, I couldn't go there. I couldn't go there. For a mom to see my boy laying on the ground battling with somebody and having a gun put to his head and knowing that if something would have happened, I would have never known where he was. I would have never known. Oh, did I know that?
No.
No.
I went to Vegas many times in your guys' car that you didn't know. You did know. You eventually knew.
We eventually knew.
You checked the mileage, and then I got in the car accident and got a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And you looked at the ticket and saw that it was right outside of Vegas.
Right. Well, and then we had to go down. We went down one time just to Mesquite because you guys were heckling some truck driver or something like that. We had to go down and pick you guys up in Mesquite.
That was just the port of entry down there.
Yeah. I had to go down and pick you up down there. But there are more things than what we could even talk about here.
I know.
There are more things than what we could talk about here.
It would take probably 3, 4, 5 hours to literally dump it out. First off, I got a DUI in my sister's car while she was doing charity work or something in some other country.
Yeah.
Then the second DUI, I rolled the car with 3 other people in it.
Now you're talking about the big accident, right?
Your car? Yeah, the LS.
Okay, let me just stop on that one for just a minute. So this was a situation, and everybody needs to know the severity of this situation. So this was a situation where how old were you then?
19.
Yeah. But you'd bought your first car. This was one that you bought.
Well, you guys co-signed.
I know.
That was a terrible decision.
And we co-signed, and since then we've never co-signed. We made a rule. We will not co-sign, and that's...
You're welcome.
Hey, guys, it was up to trial.
Yeah.
No, we did that, I think, on few, and then we decided, no, this is not a good thing to do. So we co-signed with you. You bought that car, I think, somewhere between January and March. I don't remember, but it was the first of the year. Your accident was in September, and it was either a 5 or 6 year loan.
Yeah, it was 5.
5 year loan. And you paid from whenever you bought it to September. And then I picked it up from September and the other 4 years or 4.5 years and made that payment every month on a car because there was no insurance on it.
Yep.
And that car was more than totaled. And I remember we got the call. We had been in
Lake Powell.
We were in Lake Powell with a couple of the younger kids, got the call that he'd been in the accident. And if you ever have ever had the feeling of, I need to be transported instantly somewhere, I couldn't stand to be in that car. It was like, I need to be by my boy's side. I need to be with him now. And that was so hard to make that drive home. I knew that you'd been in the accident. I knew that you'd been taken to jail. I'd heard that that they had let you out and that you were at home by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had to beg the guy that I called to bail me out.
Yeah.
I said, dude, please come get me. I'll give you money. And then he got there and I said, I need a ride home. So I just told, I said, I'll get you money when you get here. I've got money.
I just needed somebody
to come get me.
Yeah. Yeah. You got home and I can remember that. I remember coming in the house and going upstairs with you. And you can't explain the horror. I can't even explain the horror. I can't explain all the thoughts, the feelings and everything else, but going up there And then when we went and saw the car, and you know as well as I do that everybody that saw that car thought that the driver had been killed.
Yeah.
Nobody thought the driver made it out. There was a stick at least the size of my finger that was straight through the center of the headrest of that car. And the stick had was embedded in that.
Well, it was leather, and it came through the window and pierced through the leather out all the way through the other side.
If I was wearing my seatbelt
in that case, I mean, I'm not saying I'm an advocate to not wear a seatbelt.
Right.
But it would have held my body in place.
And it would have impaled you right through my head.
Yeah.
And when we looked at that car and saw that impaled, how many things need to happen before this boy needs to know that he's being protected? How many things does he need to go through before he realizes this? There's bigger stuff for him. When is he going to finally decide that there's a purpose and a reason for him being here? Because that was only one of many times that you should not have been here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my thing was like, what's going to have to happen for this boy? But with your, we sent you to your sister's house to try to detox. I remember, you know, you went up to Lonnie's to try to detox.
That was
a hard situation for both of you.
Yeah.
You know, on that, we sent you to LDS Hospital Rehab.
Yeah.
You remember that well, I'm sure.
I tried to hold it together, and I was lying to the doctors that I felt completely fine. I was in absolute misery every single night.
Yeah.
And I said, I got to get out of here. Yeah. I've got to get out of here because I was just shake. I would turn the shower on and just put it on hot and just lay curled up in the shower in misery, just pure pain. And then when I'd get up, like I'd maybe get an hour or two of sleep or whatever, get up and I'd have an interview kind of daily with the doctor.
Right.
How do you feel? I'm fine. I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd lie and lie and lie. And so he's like, wow, you're handling this quite well. And they like released me after like 3 or 4 days.
I remember getting
a phone
call saying
like
you're released. It's like, how can this be? So we went up to Salt Lake and picked you up and brought you back home. And then
I used right
same
after
stuff,
that. Yeah.
Same stuff all over again. Yeah. Same stuff.
I did finally get clean when we went up to the mountains. We went up to the mountains in the camp trailer up in Marysville and basically removed myself from all environments, phones, people, places, whatever. And then I remember getting clean up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of have no choice. You can't, you know, I don't know how long we were even up there. I don't know if it was for a week or whatever, but that's when they were building the cabin up there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
your point.
That was hell.
You remember when I found out that you'd been taking the DVDs and pawning them? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I was just getting ready to go somewhere and I noticed this stack and all of a sudden this stack had shrunk to nothing. And I looked all over and you spent a time of literally just laying in the living room. I don't know if you remember that, but I remember just sitting laying on the couch and just doing nothing for quite a while. And that was tough.
Well, I would get high and then I would just.
Mm-hmm.
Be in and out of consciousness.
And a lot of people were telling me what I needed to do.
Yeah.
You need to do this. You should do that. You should do this. And it was like, I got to go what my mom gut says. And maybe things would have changed had I done things sooner. I don't know. But I feel like you kind of know each of your kids because I handled yours differently than I really did your brother that went through similar things, you know, later on. But I think you have to know each child and knowing your determination. And knowing your attitude and, you know, if you did the wrong thing at the right time or the wrong time, I was afraid it was just going to spiral you
even worse
into the wrong direction.
Just to prove you.
Because you just had that and it had to come from you. And there were times I wondered, am I doing the right thing? Just leaving him here. Do I need to just kick him out? Well, if I kick him out, where does he have to go? But on the street or with more of this influence or at least in my head, if you were there, I knew that day where you were alive. And it got to that point in my head. All I need to know is that he's alive. Because if he's alive, I still have a chance. Once that's gone, I don't. And I know that even with my prayers that I would say constantly, you know, first they started, you know, with like, you know, that he would stop or that we could find the influence that would be right or whatever. I mean, they started with just this easy, you know, help him to learn or what do I need to do? And honestly, by the time that you made the switch and started, my prayers were, and of course this was after the Vegas thing too, and after so many other things that my prayers literally had changed too. What I ask of you is that if he doesn't make it, please let me find his body. And that's where my prayers went from here to here, was like, I can't stand it if I never find him. I couldn't handle that. So if this is going to be his life, and this is how it ends for him, and this is his journey, don't let me not find him. Make sure I can have closure with my boy. And that's the extreme that they went to from here to here, was I need to have his body. Don't let it happen in a desert somewhere, somewhere where I don't know where he's at. I need to be able to at least find him. And then I let it go. And then from there, it didn't matter anymore. It was like, in some respects, death isn't the worst thing, because I believe there's more to life after death. And I thought, if he doesn't have that here, maybe he'll get that on the other side. I'll still have him on the other side. There's still a chance for him to grow. But I need to find his body, and I need to do right by that. And that's where it finally got to for me.
It's a dark place.
It was a dark place, but yet it was also
finally
it was also letting go of, this is a high reality. And I don't know if my son will live past the age of 22 or 23, but don't let me not be able to hold him one more time. And that was a hard place for a mom to be. But that's where you were at.
Yeah.
That's where you were at.
At that point, it was 3 years into it. You know, 2 years. Because it all started when I was 19, when I started taking pills. And then the pills didn't do it anymore. And then it went to heroin. And then it went to whatever I can get my hands on, mm-hmm. right? Whatever yeah. I can put in a needle, yeah. you know?
I mean, there were, up in your room, oh my gosh, there was constant, your tinfoil shavings in the window or underneath. I would find them if I pulled out the vent. I think that if I pulled up the vent, they were in the vent.
I thought I hit everything. There. Well, yeah, you pull the vent off the floor and then you lift up the carpet and you could slide it underneath the carpet.
The things, like, never in my mind would I have ever thought I would learn so much about drugs and addicts. And what they do, and the thievery, and everything that goes on in their world, and the depth of it. That was never something that I ever thought I would ever have a knowledge of. So thank you for that extended knowledge that I have of that. Now, like, I would have, would never have ever had that knowledge. But
you know, there was the moment where you, we went to the mountains and, you know, handled my business there. And, you know, it gets to a point where you're in such pain and such misery that you, and it doesn't have to be going through withdrawals, right? It could just be in life in general that you get to a point.
Depression, discouragement.
Yeah, it could be whatever, right? Like it could be your physique. It could be your mental health, like where you're in such despair that you kind of make a micro commitment or a promise to yourself that I don't want to live like this anymore. Right? Like, I will never experience this type of pain ever again. Therefore, I have to start making different decisions, because the deep pain and misery that I was going through when I was going through withdrawals, that I had to make a promise to myself that I will never put myself in this situation ever again. Like, if I can get past this once and for all, it's not like I didn't want to get past it. You know, it's just a whole, it has such a hold. Like, there's many times that I tried without you knowing, I'd go a couple days and be like, hey, I'm going to kick it. This is it. Right. But I couldn't. And then finally on that day three, the pain would just, I literally punching myself in the face or slamming my head against the wall would be, you know, a source of comfort than, you know, I just wanted to crawl out of my body and just be done.
Well,
and
there were definitely holes in your bedroom upstairs. That's for sure, in the walls.
Yeah. But I made that promise, and, you know, if you're listening and you're in a dark place for whatever reason, it doesn't matter if it's finances, it doesn't matter if it's your health, it doesn't matter if it's something that you don't believe you're responsible for. You are responsible for your own mental health. You are responsible for your life. And
nobody else is going to come and save you.
You get what you tolerate, though.
Nobody else is going to come save you. You have to be your own savior. You have to be your own hero. You have to be. You have to look within. And when I said that caterpillar thing, man, I mean that with all my heart, because you have to know that when a caterpillar changes from what it is to a butterfly, it goes to nothing but liquid. It is nothing but mush. And a lot of us feel in those spots. We are down to nothing. But that's when it finds that it already had inside of it what it needs to be the butterfly. It didn't come to him. It didn't come to it. It was already inside it, but it didn't find it until it completely had fallen apart. I
mean, think about
it. And that's when it found what it needs to pick up those pieces.
The world
and move
is
forward.
It's still the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still Trevor.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's literally the difference of making a different choice, different actions, different habits, right?
Right.
The world is all the stuff that I was doing still exists out there.
And not only that, but a lot of people will leave. I'm going to give you another analogy here. A lot of people will leave where they grew up feeling like I can't stay here because if I stay here, I'll never be able to get out of it. You didn't do that. You got out of it staying right where you were at.
Right where I got
right
into
where you
it.
Were at. Yeah. And so
the true environment that needs to change
is within yourself.
Individual.
It's within yourself.
Yeah.
And so you got out of it staying right where, because if you take that with you and you don't change within yourself, you're taking the problem wherever you go.
Yeah.
And so you have to change what's inside of you in order to make that change.
Otherwise, you can't run away from you.
And you do it the self thing. Can I give you a funny analogy that goes with that?
Yeah.
So the one time I had dye on my hair. I was putting stuff on my hair, okay? And it stunk so bad that my eyes were watering. It just like burned and stunk. Well, I hurried to go out of the bathroom to get away from it. And then I realized it's not in the bathroom. It's on me.
Yeah.
So what was causing my problems was with me. It didn't matter where I went. I was taking that with me. It wasn't until I would get rid of that off of me that would go away, you know? And that's the same thing with this. It doesn't matter where you try to escape to. If you're taking the same you wherever you go and try to escape, the problem is within you. It's not within where you're at. It's not with your environment. It's not with other people. It's not because you were poor or your parents did this or other things. The problem exists with your paradigm and how you see things.
Mm-hmm.
It exists with who you want to be and what those limiting beliefs are and being able to get out of those limiting beliefs. So you can't just change an environment and expect everything to change. And you did a great job of being able to say, "I St. George is my home and I'm going to stay here and I'm going to overcome it."
Yeah. I mean, I did move to Salt Lake for like 10, but I had already got clean by then.
You'd already got clean and
but
you
I was trying to spread
Salt
my
Lake.
Wings and go to Salt Lake and I absolutely hated
it. You hated it there.
You know, I'm not one for big cities or lots of people, traffic, you know, this, that, the other. But I do want to also highlight the fact that even after I came out of, you know, massive drug addiction, let's call it, that addiction just changed to alcohol. Because then I got a couple more DUIs within like 3 months. Mm-hmm. I got 2 DUIs.
Mm-hmm.
But I was giving myself credit because I wasn't a crackhead. You can go buy it at the store. But I was blacking out, you know, 3 to 5 times a week, just depending on the week.
I remember that transition well, because it was that thing of like, you really didn't have a ton of run-ins with the law until went to alcohol.
Yeah.
Because the other kept you more indoors.
Yeah.
It kept you inside. It kept you just on the couch. I remember the time that I think it was with the alcohol that you got in that fight with your brother and he took off back. And then I remember thinking, oh, great, they've gone out to dinner. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
These two have gone out to dinner. And then you come home and knock on the door and open the door. And there you are, just bloodied. And you'd been in this fight with them. And you've been, I remember you going upstairs and, oh, you just...
I ended up headbutting. I headbutted a wall at Texas Roadhouse after that.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad, and I was just so torn. But you had more experiences with alcohol than you did with drugs. The drugs was horrible for you, but the alcohol got you going in and out of jail, running from police, running through fields, trying to get away.
Yeah.
And I remember a specific time you came over with some friends, and you were so drunk. If you had not been my son, I would have immediately kicked you out of my house. you were that bad, I would have said, get out of my home. Just the way you were acting and what you were doing and the whole thing. And I was just like, I don't know if this is better. You were just so ridiculous.
Most people that drink excessive alcohol get ridiculous.
Yes, it was so bad. It was like I didn't quite know how to deal with that, because it was like, I don't like this person. I don't know this person. How do I deal with this? It was a tough thing watching, you know, where some people laugh at somebody that's, I have a hard time laughing at drunk people, because to me, it's just like,
sad.
It's sad. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And then to see that.
You're less than your highest potential. Yeah,
to see that in you, it was just like, I can't process this.
What I think is important, because I eventually got past that, and how I got past that is, you know, come to find out, my wife of almost 13 years, I guess by the time this airs, it'll be 13 years in a week.
Your anniversary is next week.
Yeah, that we have been married, but come to find out, she's pregnant. And when I realized that my decisions were going to now impact, you know, other people, I didn't care about going in and out of jail. That wasn't a big deal. I mean, I went to juvenile detention, you know, and half my homies were there.
Right.
And we had fun. We would be out back playing basketball. Like going to juvenile detention or juvie or whatever you want to call it, it wasn't really a punishment. They opened the door and my homie was in there.
Right.
And we acted like we didn't want to like jump up and down or whatever right then and there, because we didn't want them to switch rooms. But like, we enjoyed each other's company in there, and we would go out and
it was familiar to you. We'd play basketball against other people,
and we'd win. And
it was familiar.
It was fun.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
People, it gets real when you know that your decisions. And again, obviously, I impacted you, but I was too young to think about
the connection
that. Right?
Wasn't there. And boy, I'll tell you, that's one thing, Trevor. Is people that always say, and it's common with the whole thing. Look, it's my decision.
Yeah.
If I want to do drugs, it's my decision. If I want to drink, it's my decision. And it's like it only
affects me.
It does not just affect you. Yeah. You have people that love you that are affected every single day by the decisions you choose to make.
Yeah. I remember Aunt Joan writing me letters. That was giving me hope too during my addict days. Yeah. But when I realized that's when I slowly started. I'm not saying I immediately snapped out of it and I was like done with alcohol or whatever. I still kind of had bouts with it, but I would say no more often.
You went to tobacco really heavy at that time.
I loved chewing tobacco. Yeah. But I've always been an addict in terms of like. Again, like you said, it's 100% or nothing, depending on what it is. Like I just don't play halfway. Right. So now it's obviously, now I do 2-a-days in terms of my exercise, right? Mm-hmm. Saturday, I ran 16 miles and then on Sunday, 6. And
it's almost like you have this need to be excessive. Yeah. Whatever it is you're going to do, you're going to be excessive at it.
Yeah. I just think it's important for people to understand that you do have children that are watching. You know, I watched you, whether you know it or not, you were a massive source of strength. Like even now, you know, I'm like, well, if my mom raised 7 kids and, you know, did all that with zero money, like, I don't know how she got through it. And I have a lot more than what we had growing up, but you give me a source of strength, and I have to, you know, I started coming to that realization when I found out, you know, my wife is pregnant. And, well, it wasn't my wife when we found that out. So once she becomes my wife, obviously I know it's going to affect her as well. But after that, that's when I finally decided to say no to people, places, and things. Mm-hmm. You know, within about a year or so of her being born. And I said, okay, this is getting real. I now have to provide, and I need to provide at a high level. And that's when I really doubled and tripled down on, you know, becoming a better version financially and starting to be able to support, you know, a family. And then from there, obviously the course of the last, you know, 13, 14 years, whatever it's been, she just turned 13. So has been on an uptick just purely through decisions and choices and actions and habits and routines and environments and the things that I put into my mind, right? This year I wanted to get closer to God, so I made it a point to create an environment where that could happen. So on purpose, I listened to only Christian music for the first 6 months this year, whether it was in the car, whether it was at the gym, anything outside of a podcast, it was all Christian
music.
Dude,
I could have given you plenty of CDs.
I didn't want to tell you that I was doing that, because then you would have said, I told you so. Finally, you're coming around, you know. So
there's lots of good music you can listen to.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. You know, let me make my decisions. You know, I don't need do well with other people making my decisions for me. Let me come around to it when I need to and listen to what I need to. But the real question is what are you doing to control your current situation and remove whatever the negative situations are that you're currently dealing with, because you are the source of your pain. You are the source of your problems. You are the source of your misery, but you're also the source of all the pleasures and all the possibilities and all the, you know, amazing experiences that you can have on this earth, provided you choose to remove distractions. You know, we're in a time where distractions are at an all-time high. You know, families are breaking apart. And that's when I finally decided to really, really commit and say, I need to become the best version of myself. And I want to live a life that is of an example to my kids, to my family, and to anybody else in my ecosystem. I feel closest to God when I'm pushing myself to the extreme or to the max. And here's why. I believe, you know, we've been given God-given potential.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's up to us to find out what that potential is. How can you feel close to God if you're not actually honoring his human design and pushing his design? When I'm out running for 3 hours, I've told my wife, Nicole, that's when I feel most connected. I'm with self. And even just this last weekend, you know, I was trying to talk to God, and it just came over me. And he's like, people pray for strength. It's already in you. You've already been blessed with that. You know, people pray for patience. It's already in you. You just have to practice it, right? You've already been given all the blessings and all the potential.
It's up to you to execute on it.
Yes. You have to unravel it. And how do you do that? By removing distractions and actually focusing on the things that are of importance, right? Your health, your family, your finances, you know, all of these things do matter.
But I think that a lot of times people get in that same search that we talked about earlier. They get that search for happiness. There's something missing.
Yeah.
They feel that there's something missing. And so it's going to be a drug, or it's going to be money, or it's going to be, and then they get there and they realize that's not it. So now what? And they're lost in this triangle of constantly trying to find the happiness, when they don't realize that the happiness comes from being your best. Growth is happiness. Moving forward individually is what brings happiness. Progress brings happiness. And that is progress, like you mentioned, in your health, in the way you eat, in your relationships with family.
The way you think.
In your relationship with your God, of that.
Yeah.
As you progress, you will find happiness. But just getting and saying, when I get that car, when I get this amount of money, when I get that house, those things will not bring happiness, because as soon as you have them, it's only 6 months later and you finally want something else.
Well, you're going to now need a house on the beach.
So it needs something else.
You need a house in this country or that country.
Yeah.
You know, there's money's endless and infinite, right? Yeah. And so you can always get more of that and continue to set the bar higher and higher and higher. Cool. That's just one aspect, right? The idea is you could be worth $50 million and be depressed.
Absolutely. And we see it all the time.
All the time.
We see, you've got countries where you got these cute kids that are just as
poorer
than we ever were. They have dirt floors. They have nothing. And they are so happy, and they play, and they're wonderful in their own environment because it's what they know, and they are perfectly happy.
They don't
you
feel
couldn't
like
tell
they
them
lack.
That they lacked. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're happy. And then, like you say, you've got people that have more money than they know how to spend.
Yeah.
And they're depressed.
Yeah.
They're sad because they don't know what the next step is for them.
Well, they've got everything.
They've
got and if everything materialistic doesn't bring it, now what?
Now what? Now where
right?
do you go?
And so now you're just in, again, a dark, dark spot. And again, the kids that are happy kicking, you know, a cardboard box or whatever for a soccer ball, they don't have the same distractions we have. So they can't compare themselves and see that they're lacking anything.
Right.
They're just living and being, right?
They're enjoying who they are. They're enjoying being with a company of friends. They enjoy family. They enjoy that unity.
Yeah.
They feel more of those feelings that bring about happiness than people who are after those material things.
Yeah.
Material things are wonderful, and they can bring joy.
Oh, yeah.
There is a drastic difference between joy and happiness.
Yeah.
And if you want to search for those things, that extra place on the beach, bring me great joy. But long last, we love it.
We love Newport Beach.
I told my husband, I said, next year I'm, you know. But happiness is different than joy. Happiness comes from inside.
Yeah.
Happiness comes from knowing who you are and that continual progress. Anytime you stop personal progress, you're going to start getting depressed and you're going to wonder why. Why am I feeling down? Why am I feeling depressed?
The devil wants you to stop personal progress.
Oh, right? The devil wants you to stop progress.
You stop.
You stop progress. Right. And not only that, but when you stop progress yourself because of the distractions and because of the devil, like you said, you have now progressed his plan.
Agenda. Yeah.
His agenda has progressed by you being depressed, lacking, discouraged, and all of that.
Your potential.
Yes. Right. Yes. You stop your potential. You have now just made him laugh in your face.
Yeah.
But you have got to find a way to grow. And if it's just step at a time, little at a time, find something you can progress in and grow in.
Yeah, it's not like I'm doing what I do now 10 years ago.
Right.
It was like, hey, I kind of need to get back into the gym. I need to start reading.
Right.
And then the next.
I mean, your 38 miles was not your first run.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just starting to move in a positive direction and it starts feeling good and you say, huh, this feels good. What more can I do? And then you add one more and one more and
when you do positive things, it has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
You cannot spend the time eating good and then not feel like you want to exercise a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you want to do a little bit more. So it all has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
So don't, and that's the thing that I, you know, when people do these great big, I'm just going to change everything. It's almost they're looking for failure.
Yeah.
Because when one of those go down, then they stop. And it's like, everything. I can't do it. I just can't do it. And the excuse that I hate the worst when people do things is like, well, this is just who I am. Well, that's it. This is who I am. I'm not going to change. I can't change. This is who I am. It's like, no, that's the biggest excuse ever.
Yeah.
Everyone is meant for more. Everyone has the potential for greatness. Everyone does. I don't care where you're at right now. Everyone has the potential for greatness. So you need to find that one little thing and let that one little thing be your focus. And when you do that one little thing, something else is going to come along because you're going to start feeling good doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings something else that you want to do and something else that you want to do. So don't look at like where Trevor's at right now and say, well, that's what I got to do next year. No, start maybe where Trevor started 13 years ago and say, I'm just going to make this one little tweak in my life. And that one little tweak is going to take you somewhere that's going to make you add something else and add something else. And then with that growth, you can look back and see how far you've come.
Yeah, compounds. I mean, like interest.
Right? Where you've come from is, there's not a lot of people that make it. I mean, you've had friends of your own that have not made it through that.
That's passed away. Yeah.
That have not made it. And and you even have friends that are still in it and still struggling.
Out of jail.
And so where you have come from where you've been is great kudos. I don't even know what you want to say, but it's a powerful, powerful effect to think that, you know, my only prayer for you was I want to find his body to where you are today.
Mm.
And that didn't all happen at once. So anybody in that situation, anybody that's at the very bottom right now, I want you to just look within yourself and find those little pieces that can be something different and go for it. Yep. Go for it and don't look back.
It won't happen overnight, no. But a lot can change in 5 or 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
You saw that, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot can change in 1 year. It doesn't even take that. You know, what is that saying that people underestimate what they can do in 10 years?
Overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they could do in 10 years.
10 years and stuff like that. So you have to be real about it. But the most important part is you have to start.
Yeah.
You have to start.
Mm-hmm. I loved it. I loved having you on the show.
I love you.
I love you. And I'm glad I listened to that little voice that said, get your mom on the show, you know, and I hope this impacted somebody. If you will, I know that you're working on some stuff that's, you know, going to come to fruition, you know, your YouTube or whatever it is. If you will share that with them, if they want to connect with you, you know, how would they connect with you and say you're a saint, you know, or whatever they want to say?
Well, I've been trying for years and years and years because it's always been my passion to take everything that I've learned and been through, and you know, even going through what I did with Trevor and with other kids and with life in general and things like that, I just feel like there's people out there that are struggling. There's people out there that don't know that they can that they can rise above where they're at right now, or that they can make those choices themselves. I think people are afraid to make choices too. And people are afraid of success. People who have been stressed, they're not comfortable when they're not stressed. And they want to go right back to being stressed. Yeah. And they will create that stress because it's an uncomfortable, comfortable zone for them.
Yeah.
And so there's just so much.
The devil that they know.
Yeah, it's exactly what they know. And so for years I've been trying and will continue to try. But I do have a Facebook page. It's called Forward Speaking. If you go to it now, you won't see too much on it, but it is building. So I would love it if you would come and join that. Also a YouTube that's Forward Speaking, and that is all one word. It's not a space between Forward and Speaking. It's all one word. But one of the things that I want to start this next year is a program called Back Pocket Possibilities. And what that really is just the fact that, we don't make these changes all at once, but here's just some thoughts and some ideas and some analogies that just, stick it in your back pocket. If it hits you now, great. If it's something that later on you remember it and you go, I remember that little thought, or I remember that, I'm going to pull it out now. Because I think a lot of times we have to be in the right place, the right time for things to connect.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of things that we know in our mind, but until we actually connect them with our heart, they don't happen for us. We all know we should eat better, right? We all know we should exercise. But until it connects somehow to our heart, we get our heart and our mind working together. It just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen different times for different people, depending on where they're at in life. So this Back Pocket Possibilities is just some ideas, some thoughts, possibilities for everybody. Stick it in your back pocket. When it works for you, pull it out and use it. Yeah. Move forward.
Do what you want with it. I mean, you could read the same quote every single year from the age of 10 to 80.
Right.
And it would have a different meaning
every time,
every single year.
Just depending on your situation in life. Yeah.
On an annual basis. Yeah. And you have your perspective.
It changes.
It's changes and evolving. So again, it has different
meanings. And it deepens. So, I think sometimes the meanings deepen for you as you go through different experiences. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on, Mom.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah,
it was fun. And we enjoyed it. Guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you please review it. I'd love to see the reviews go up. Make sure you share it with somebody that you think that it could impact. Other than that, keep kicking ass. See you next week.